This is Spectator Radio, the Spectator's curated podcast collection.
Hello and welcome to the Americano podcast, a series of discussions about American politics and the Trump presidency for the new Spectator USA website. I'm joined today by Zach Christensen, who is publisher of Spectator USA and formerly CEO of a data analytics company called CrowdScout. And we're going to be discussing Trump's war chest for 2020. Now, Zach, I'd like to talk about the news today that Trump, in the first quarter of 2019, has raised over $30 million for his 2020 campaign. This is, to me, a staggering sum of money, particularly after all we've been hearing about how much various Democratic candidates are raising. What do you think it says about Trump's campaign and his chances for 2020?
Well, I can tell you, I think right away that what it says about his campaign is that they take digital very seriously. You know, they put their former digital director in charge of the entire campaign. And I think what we're seeing is, you know, a payoff of that strategy of going all in on digital. Obviously, the Trump campaign focuses very heavily on using Facebook for fundraising. They have a great email operation. They're using things like text messaging now to raise dollars. So they've really kind of gone all in on this small dollar donor strategy, which I think is really, really paying off for them. And what we also see, and just from knowing what they're doing, is that they really haven't even put into place their full high dollar fundraising apparatus yet either, or any of their bundling program, which sort of gets those middle dollars in. And so everything we're seeing right now, I think, is a testament to like how all in on digital they are and how all in they are on using things like analytics and different social media platforms.
This is not something we usually associate with the Republican Party. I mean, for a long time, or since Obama, really, the Democratic Party have been way ahead in terms of digital fundraising and online donations.
That's true. And I think on the Democratic side of the aisle, you've seen actually, I think, some pretty big numbers. You know, Bernie Sanders is putting up huge numbers. I think he raised $18 million. Mayor Pete threw up really huge numbers, which is pretty incredible. And also, you also have to look, I think, at, you know, in terms of how fundraising is going for these different campaigns, how the burn rate for these campaigns look as well. And you have...
Sorry, Zach, explain what you mean by burn rate for our non-experts.
All of these political campaigns, they spend a lot of money in order to raise the money. So you might see a campaign, you know, if a campaign raises $20 million, but they spent $18 million on fundraising costs, that's actually a very poor burn rate. Maybe it's not a poor burn rate because there's a lot of upfront investment that is made to raise money online. You have to spend money on advertisements in order to acquire a new donor. So it might cost, for instance, $50 in advertising costs to sign up one new donor. And that one new donor might at first only pay, you know, only donate, you know, $10, $15, $20. But the goal is that you sign up these low dollar donors and you pay upfront costs in order to sign up those donors. And then over the long term, those small dollar donors are going to end up donating maybe $100, $150, $200. So you have to look at the burn rates of these campaigns and how much they're actually spending in order to raise the amounts that they're raising. So for instance, I saw this morning that Mayor Pete's burn rate is about 10%. It's incredibly low. And so they're raising a lot of money and not having to spend a lot of money to raise those dollars.
And that's from just free publicity, which, interestingly, the Trump campaign, having always been associated since 2016, everybody's associated Trump with all this amazing free publicity. It's usually very negative free publicity, but it works for him. It's the under-the-radar campaign at the moment, because all the mainstream media attention is on Bernie and Kamala Harris and Beto O'Rourke and now Mayor Pete.
Certainly. And I think that's certainly true. You know, there's a lot of attention right now to some of these Democratic campaigns, especially, you know, Mayor Pete's kind of blowing up right now. But, you know, I think the Trump campaign probably they realize that. But you can see that they're really focused and committed to raising these amounts. And so you can see, I think in the first quarter of 2019, they spent between $7 and $8 million just advertising on social media platforms. So they're really, you know, they're taking advantage, I think, of they're taking advantage of sort of this lull in media to really build up their war chest and be ready to go, which is, I think, again, as you mentioned when we started this, is something that we've never seen a presidential campaign do before. They're also spending a lot. They're spending a lot on building out the infrastructure. You know, they wasted no time in getting ready for 2020. You know, almost immediately after Trump was elected in 2016, they immediately started building up their infrastructure, spending lots of money to do that. So building out their data infrastructure, building out, you know, building up their fundraising lists and making sure that that they're ready to go. So they've wasted no time in raising this money. And you're really seeing it pay off right now with the dollars that they're raising.
And this slightly puts paid to the idea that you still often hear that Trump may not be up for even running again, or that he's not really committed, his heart's not really in it. I mean, certainly his campaign is, I don't think any presidential incumbent candidate, as he is, has been in such a strong financial position before a presidential run. Is that, that's correct, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I don't have the numbers handy, but, you know, up until this point in Obama's reelection campaign, he had raised, you know, a fraction, I mean, single digit millions of dollars for his reelection. Same thing with Bush. So yeah. Nobody's really attempted to do anything like this. You know, most presidential campaign reelection campaigns don't really get started or even declared until after the midterms. So at this point, you know, for the Bush reelect or the Obama reelect, both of those campaigns were really just getting up and running. Whereas again, the Trump campaign really never stopped, especially with what they're doing, you know, using digital tools and social platforms and text messaging and things like that.
And let's talk more broadly about how fundraising has changed in presidential politics, because historically, candidates would probably want to be quite discreet about how much money they'd raise because they would come from large donors. And now, as we saw with the Trump campaign today, campaigns are very, very keen to stress how much they've raised, because they will then say, and 90 in Trump's case, 99% of it is from donors under $200. So it's a way of showing your popularity. It's almost a way of polling now, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, campaigns want to stress, you know, and show the grassroots support that they have. I mean, especially as online fundraising has become, you know, especially for many Democrats, the de facto way to raise money for campaigns. It is. It's a show of support. And one of the ways that Democrats are showing that is that, you know, they have this new threshold for how to make the debate stage. And one of the thresholds is how many individual donors that you have to your campaign. The number is 65,000. So if you have 65,000 donors to your campaign, most of these are coming from online, that's a show of support within the party. So even the parties themselves are using these numbers to show a level of support and grassroots and, you know, broad grassroots support amongst the campaigns. And, you know, when you read articles and things like that, the numbers that the campaigns are touting, they really want to show this broad base of support, show the number of donors they have. And really, it's sort of bragging rights to see what the average donation is and how low your average dollar amount donation is. And that's for a few reasons. One, you want to show that you have, you know, you want to show that you have the support of sort of the common man, I guess. You know, the people that are spending the least, who have the least amount to donate, are supporting your candidacy. But it's also very important too, because there are limits on what a person can donate. And so the lower your average donation is now, means that your audience, it means that your base of grassroots support has the most giving power in the future. So if you have a campaign and your average donation right now is $150 or something like that, it means that actually most of your campaign are giving bigger amounts. So as you go forward, those people can't give as much as people who maybe are giving average donation of $30. So it's also a show of support of maybe the longevity that you might have in a campaign.
And how much are the big donors? You know, we know that Michael Bloomberg has got this $500 million war chest that he wants to deploy against Trump in some way, and he probably hasn't decided exactly how he's going to spend it. How much are they looking at, you know, where the small donations are going in order to judge where they should put their larger donations?
Yeah, well, so, you know, the large donors on both sides of the aisle, you know, I think that they're not really necessarily doing much right now. I mean, obviously, the large super PACs on the right are going to be supporting Trump in one way or another. And on the left, you know, I think my sense is that most of the large super PACs that are sort of unaffiliated right now, there's no point in spending money, especially if you're an unaffiliated super PAC, on anything going on right now. You're going to wait until, you know, it looks like there's a nominee selected and start to line up behind them. And I think that you're going to see a lot of different super PACs doing a lot of different interesting things this year. You know, historically, super PACs have really been focused on buying television time and running advertisements. And I think over the, you know, what we've seen over the last course of the last campaign and really every campaign before that, organizing is so important. And I think you're going to see a lot of super PACs start to get involved in organizing on both sides of the aisle. And when I say organizing, I mean actual sort of boots on the ground, knocking on doors, making phone calls, and actually doing the grassroots work that a lot of it used to fall to the campaigns and the political parties, both the Democratic, the DNC, and the RNC. But you're starting to see a lot more of the super PACs and the 501c4 groups start to get involved in that grassroots organizing.
And you also have quite an interesting thing that happens with, you know, I'd say, let's call it Democratic mainstream media, which is, you know, the dominant voice in America in many ways. When Obama won, using, you know, various Facebook tricks and digital tactics that were revolutionary at the time, they talked about sort of harnessing people power, and they talked about it in evangelical terms. And then, of course, when Trump did the same thing to them, it became that he'd hacked democracy. Do you think we'll see a similar thing at play, depending on the result, next time?
Oh, certainly. What the Trump campaign themselves were doing was pretty standard politics, pretty standard digital organizing. But what they did is that they figured out things. They figured out how to utilize Facebook in a way that it hadn't been utilized yet. And so a lot of people got really worried about that. But, you know, I don't think there was a similar outcry when the Obama campaign was using a lot of these tools and tricks and tactics. And frankly, you know, I think a lot of the data that the Obama campaign had access to was the same stuff that Cambridge Analytica was being accused of using, and obviously far less outcry. So certainly,
we should be corrected. I think what's true, you know this more than me because I think you first told me about it, is that Facebook had changed its terms of service, right?
Right. Facebook had changed its terms of service. When the Obama campaign was doing it, it was still a legit thing that you could do on Facebook. Cambridge Analytica had scraped data, which is not okay. So they certainly did something wrong, in terms of Facebook's terms of service. But in terms of, you know, the data that was being used, it's you know, not much different than what the Obama campaign was doing. But I think this cycle around, you're going to see kind of going really all in on some of the tactics that the Trump campaign was using. And I think you'll see a lot more adoption across the entirety of the political apparatus.
And a figure not to be overlooked in this is, of course, Brad Pascali, who you mentioned at the beginning, though not by name. And he's actually in charge of the whole campaign. But he is really the mastermind, might be putting it a bit strongly, but he is in many ways the mastermind of Trump's digital success in 2016. And now he is in charge of the whole campaign, it seems.
Well, I think that, you know, putting Brad Pascali, you know, in charge of the entire campaign, again, is a testament to the campaign's real dedication to digital, right? And you really haven't seen that level of dedication, that level of, I guess, trust in how important digital is to a campaign yet from anyone up until now. I mean, it's pretty remarkable to watch somebody from the digital world being elevated to run the entire campaign. And I think that, you know, We obviously all know that Trump is a huge fan of Twitter. He's a huge fan of how you can disseminate your message digitally. And I think, you know, putting Pascal in charge of the entire campaign shows that they're going to really, really be focused on digital for getting their message out and for organizing voters.
And so Zach, how are you feeling generally about how this race is going to go? I mean, it seems to me that Trump is in a bigger position than the bookmakers and the polls suggest because of this ability to generate quite large sums of money and what that says about the nature of his actual base.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, I think it's tough to say. During the 2016 campaign, Trump was vastly outspent by the Clinton campaign. The Clinton campaign raised almost double the Trump campaign raised. So, you know, money isn't necessarily an indicator of how an election is going to go. That being said, you're right. You know, the wide base of support that Trump has from grassroots supporters, I think, is sometimes overlooked. You know, I think that if you watch and read media reports, it's as if the entire country is sort of against Trump. But really, you know, if you look at the numbers and you look at a lot of the polling, especially in what some might call flyover country, you know, in the Midwest and in the plains and out west, I think he has a huge broad base of support. And especially in the states that matters and amongst the voters that Democrats are going to be trying to go after. I think his fundraising numbers really show a huge broad base of support that people might be underestimating.
Thanks very much, Zach. We'll leave it there. Thank you very much for listening. Just a reminder that you can subscribe to this podcast on iTunes, and you can also subscribe to the magazine through our special podcast offer, which is on www.spectator.co.uk/podoffer, and we'll even throw in a Spectator moleskin notebook for people who take up that offer.